Hello, my fine friends, and welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Vanilla Adam. How are you,
Vanilla Adam? I wondered where it was going to go, Stuart. I'm doing good, but I'm a little upset with you, to be honest.
Okay, pray tell.
Well, I mean, in our previous episode, you clearly told me you would give me naming rights to the episode that we recorded last week, and you didn't even consult with me before giving it a Vanilla Adam title for the episode. So you're 0-2.
Well, we can change it. It's fine. And if you actually go back and listen to it, I didn't commit to it. I said that was an idea. Is basically I acknowledged your thought, but didn't necessarily commit. If you want me to rename it, you can.
Well, so
although you can name greatest, this one.
Well, I think we will, but because okay. the greatest segment in mm-hmm. all of destination marketing, as you know, is mm-hmm. Stu's News. And so the low-hanging fruit to name this episode, because it was basically kind of your thoughts on the industry, why not Stu's Muse?
Views.
I had Muse. Views is good too. But you just totally missed an opportunity there to be creative.
Yeah, I just, you know, my brand's not as big as yours yet, Adam. You know, once I get to that level, then I can certainly do that. You know, one of our most
I can coach you.
One of our most listened to episodes is the one, so this shows your brand, is the one where it's, is Adam wrong about owned media? Like, that's one of our number one. I think it's more about the quality of the content from Katie Briscoe than it is from your name and brand recognition. But maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But this is going to be a fun episode, man. Go ahead, follow your thought.
Well, if people want to listen to see us be successful, I'm excited about that. But if people also want to line up and get excited to disagree with me, your views still count. Whichever one you're rooting for, we're good.
Unless they do it on LinkedIn and then get upset when you kind of poke back at them. I don't know. Hypothetically speaking.
Satire might be lost in the written word. That's an inside joke for those that look at all my LinkedIn content.
Yeah. You had a nice little back and forth this week. And that was going to be Stu's News, but it's not. So let's set up this episode and then let's jump into the real Stu's News. So last episode, as you know, I pontificated. I sort of shared some of my innermost secrets and thoughts and feelings. And, you know, Adam hadn't heard any of that. So I wanted him to go and digest it, have a little think himself, probably use ChatGPT because, you know, it's Adam and he needs a little assistance. And then come back and let's sort of have a second therapy session and share with me what your takeaways were, what your questions are, and maybe push back a little bit on some of what I was saying. And I'll be honest, in the few days, week, or whatever it is since we recorded that, some of my own opinions may have evolved as well. So we're not sure where this one's going either, but it's going to be a fun one. But before we jump into that, it is the greatest segment in all of entertainment, but Adam's going to have to sing the jingle again because he's on the road. And so, Adam, take away the jingle.
News. Galaxy 2, Stu's News, Interstellar Crew.
I think you went like an octave too high there. You committed and you stuck with it, which is commendable. But yeah, I'd bring it down.
You can't bail halfway through.
Yeah, no, you got to commit, which you did. So you're bringing us the Stu's News this week.
Yeah.
So it's Adam's news. So go for it. What do we have?
So Stuart, this morning, I'm in Tulsa at an event and had the opportunity to speak at Sports ETA Symposium today and great crowd, great group, had a wonderful time. But I opened up LinkedIn and it was about 15 minutes before my presentation. And I guess the LinkedIn algorithm knows how to feed me exactly what I want at this point, because the person whose post I saw is a third degree connection, or it says third plus. And so it's not like it's somebody that I know that would normally pop up in my feed, but she made this post and it was very thought provoking for me. And I'd love your take and also any listeners that are listening. But I as I read it, I thought the rate of change that you and I talked about last week on the episode, one of the things that we said was the assumptions that we believe can continue, is that the acceleration of the rate of change is going to continue. And this is a great example. So her name, I want to make sure I get it right, Ariel Meadow Stallings. And I'm actually going to read the post to you because I think it's worth reading. She
Okay.
says, "Something happened literally overnight last night that's forcing me to rethink everything I thought I knew about content strategy, audience reach, and how people find what they need in 2025. I woke up this morning to a notification that someone had purchased my guidebook, Reflected, using ChatGPT as a mirror for self-discovery in the middle of the night. Cool, great, I love that. But then the reader emailed me to say they'd found the guide because they were asking ChatGPT if anyone else had experienced the same weird, disorienting, existentially profound thing they were going through with AI. And ChatGPT told them, yes, actually, a writer named Ariel Meadows-Stallings had published a guidebook about it. AI just like handed this person the link to my ebook in the middle of the night. This reader doesn't know me or my work. They've never heard of my books or websites. They weren't Googling, they weren't scrolling Instagram. They literally asked GPT-4o a big open-ended question about self-awareness and AI, and the LLM responded by recommending a thing I had written. It even linked to my Gumroad page, which I'd never heard of Gumroad before this. And this wasn't a hallucination. It was accurate, verbatim, title, correct link. I've been working in content and digital publishing for 25 years. I know how to optimize a blog post, how to build backlinks, how to target keywords, how to write for the algorithm, back when Google still worked and we could still agree on what the algorithm even was. But this wasn't that. This wasn't SEO. This was something entirely new. This was someone asking ChatGPT a deeply human question. And instead of giving a generic answer, it pointed them to a human voice, mine, not because of search rankings or traffic stats, but because the structure and tone of what I wrote matched the emotional shape of the question they were asking. So yeah, I'm reeling a bit because this means ChatGPT isn't just answering questions, it's curating links. It's becoming a discovery engine. And not just for facts or summaries, but for personal essays and self-help guides and frameworks and philosophies. And suddenly I'm sitting here wondering, if SEO was about optimizing for search intent, what do we call this new thing? Mirror intent? Prompt resonance? Emotional pattern matching? Whatever it is, it's happening. And I think it's going to change how some of us write, how we publish, and how we show up online, especially those of us who have been trained to chase search engine rankings and audience avatars. There's a new kind of reader now. One who isn't typing queries into Google, but whispering questions into a machine and hoping something real answers back.
It's powerful, man. And you can call me Nostradamus if you want, because this is exactly what I was talking about last week in the in last episode. Like this is how things are changing. People are going to go into conversations with an artificial intelligence machine that they trust, and it's going to become more than just an answer, right? It's going to become a companion. We talked a lot last week about how word of mouth is going to continue to be one of the most valuable ways to influence people. And if you trust your LLM, its recommendations are going to be very, very compelling to you. And so this is phenomenal. Yes, it's a focus group of one, but it's validation of the hypothesis that this is potentially what's going to happen, you know? So I'm super
Well,
excited
and
about this. And I hope it shifts the paradigm for a lot of people. I hope it changes the axis of rotation of the earth a little bit, because I think we all as marketers need to understand how significant, how profound, and how rapid this change is. And it's happening now.
and this, Stuart, is where you talked a little bit about, okay, what function is the website even going to have in
Right.
the future, right? This person was able to get to a link per purchase and circumvented not only a website, but also Amazon and, all the
Well,
other.
potentially, right? We don't know where the transaction actually occurred,
No,
right?
so
The
that's not
lit.
what I mean. I mean,
Okay.
the search
Yeah,
did
yeah.
not happen on any of the traditional platforms
Right.
that you would go to try to find the
Everything
top.
except for the transaction, right, happened external from the website. But I think we're
Yep.
not far away from the actual transaction. Like it's inevitable that the AI providers are gonna have integrations to purchase. They already have, right? I think was it Perplexity and TripAdvisor have already done it, and so there's some others that are obviously going to do that. So it's inevitable that the transaction's going to happen there, and there's obviously going to have to be some kind of authorization, akin to like Apple Pay or something like that. But this is what we were talking about as our existential threat last week as destinations is. The method of research selection, that whole awareness consideration and conversion funnel is collapsed. It's a singularity now, and the AI is in control of every aspect of it. So right now we're not in a world, you know, there are folks out there trying to provide tools to help you better inform the LLM, but this isn't search engine optimization. This isn't the same thing, right? This isn't where I can do some black hat mechanics and do stuff that influences where I rank, because there's millions and billions of words that are going into training the AI. And so until there's sponsored placement, which they already exists in places like Perplexity, but it's not in ChatGPT yet. It's probably coming, but we have no skin in the game. Like, all we can do is provide the best, most relevant, contextual, individualized content we can, and then find ways to deliver that to consumers directly, bypassing all the current modalities. So it's coming
And
and it's here.
but that's exactly why, Stuart, as we've talked about where marketing needs to go, to this point, the value of content in my mind just went up a hundredfold because now there's two purposes for it. Number one is we're building content because we want a better relationship with the listener, viewer, potential visitor, however we want to describe it. But this just took it a step further. Because now, if I create content, a high volume of content that can get more narrow into what somebody may be searching for. I mean, this woman had a very specific question, right? They said they were asking if anyone else had experienced the same weird, disorienting, and existentially profound thing they were going through with AI. And so, not only are we creating content that's going to resonate with the visitor, but we're creating content that's going to generate or power the LLMs to give the correct answer to somebody. And that answer will only come if the content is there and answers the question.
Right, but you know, the other thing we talked about a lot last week was context in individualization. And so this is how we got to start thinking about content immediately. Is it's not we're not doing the spray and pray generic stuff anymore. That content, that truth exists in the LLM. In thousands of people have already published every generic piece of information about your destination. You can't compete there. It's just noise at this point. The only way for you to compete is to differentiate yourself with individualized, contextual content that is going to matter. We've got to start writing for an audience of one, not an audience of infinite. And so it actually makes me really excited, because I think we're really set up at Visit Model Beach to be able to deliver on that. And we've already been talking about messaging to an audience of one with our paid media and with our CDP. And, you know, we hadn't really turned that corner on content yet, although we've been doing more individualized content from specific voices. You know, we were launching a chatbot that has personas, which is sort of synthesized individual voices. But I think that's okay. You know, I think you still want the authenticity of real people, but I think you also can leverage the concept of synthesized individualized content as well. So this gets me really excited for the future. It validates our hypothesis. It makes me want to double down on some of the bets we're making. And yes, it's a focus group of one, but I think it's an illustration of what the future holds is happening now. So I'm excited. I think it's great.
I think it's super interesting, and of course, this could eventually be an episode in and of itself, but I really enjoyed reading that, and it was really thought-provoking for me about where the future of marketing and just consumer behavior looks like it might be headed.
So what's that you're saying, Adam, that I was right all along? Is that what I hear? So I don't
Yeah, I could see how that could be the interpretation from what we just talked about, but I don't know that I'm ready to go that far just yet.
right, that's fair. So let's segue then. Let's have a little chat. So you've had a little chance to digest our conversation from the previous episode. So afterwards, you know, at the end of the episode, you said it made you think a little bit and you know, rethink some things. So give us your sort of gut reaction right after having sat on that for a couple of days.
Yeah, so I would like if it's okay with you and the audience to just do a brief recap of the conversation that we had and some of the things that really hit for me. Number one, the first thing you said that obviously, and this is a little bit of like confirmation bias. So I'm just going to go ahead and lead with that so that nobody judges me as I say this. But you mentioned that media is hitting a cliff because the reason or one of the issues that we have is if you take all the available impressions that there are to be sold today, every single person in the world would need to watch like or see like 20 ads a day or something like that in
like
order to
thousands
reach
of
that
ads.
number.
It's like 6 hours of constant ads. It's insane.
So there's no way,
yeah.
right? And
Yeah.
so there's something about the way media is being measured that scares me.
But
and
we've all
especially
seen
when,
it, right? Can I double down on that? Because you've been to a website where the same ad appears like five times on the same page, right? And so, but each of those is counted as a separate impression in your chart, but they're not equally valuable, right? And you could argue that there's a reinforcement or whatever, and it increases the billboard effect, but it's still not optimum. I mean, if I'm seeing other people's ads served five times on the same page, it's probably happening to everyone, right? It's likely happening to everyone. And so I think there's a lot of inefficiencies in it. And I think that's about to get called out. And that's where some of it could collapse. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying paid media is dead, right? I'm just saying there are question marks around
but the
current
methodology.
Practices.
The methodology that has become the standard for media purchasing, which is by impression, I think is going to be under a lot of scrutiny in the short term, considering the volume of impressions compared to the actual impressions that are available.
Right, especially considering that volume, the availability of that volume is going to get squeezed, right? Because let's say right now everything was perfect and there was no, you know, inflation of numbers or anything of that stuff. If what we just talked about is true, where people, their shopping behavior is going to go more to conversation than it is visiting five websites, the number of available impressions just decreased precipitously overnight, right? And maybe that'll take some time. So let's pull back. Let's not say it's overnight. But the number of potential impressions, the number of consumers isn't going up, right? The population of the world isn't dramatically increasing. And if I'm viewing, like right now, to book a hotel room, let's say 30 different websites, but now I switch my modality to chat and I go to one website to book, well, as an individual, I just decreased my number of available impressions significantly. And if you expand that to the population, we're not going to have the ability to serve people at the volume of ads. So that's another reason it's going to collapse.
Yes, and I also, and I know we don't need to spend too much time on this, but I don't think the number of impressions for sale is going to decrease in the short term, even though behavior is going to continue to change, which means, and I, you know, I'm not the one that's pulling the levers on that, so I can't answer the questions, where did those impressions go? But I don't think there's a scenario where the volume of available impressions to sell stays the same, but consumer behavior continues to go towards ChatGPT. At some point, there's a breaking point where there's enough questions being asked where there's going to be a major change.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So you talked about media hitting a cliff. You said what a website is today, who knows what it's going to look like in 5 years, but we know it's not going to look the exact same that it does today. And then we talked about the acceleration of consumer behavior because the rate of change, and in fact, you mentioned that based on, I can't remember where you said you had gotten the information from, but they were saying that because the singularity is coming, we maybe get closer to the 1500s. The gap between today and the 1500s may be the same as the gap between now and several years from now because of the rate of change that's going to happen, right? And so that is a major, major concern for me, just as I hear that, because the rate of change means that, like, not only are things going to be very different than they were before, but the distance between the leaders and or the winners and the losers, I think, is going to get bigger because of the rate of change. So that was interesting. And then the assumptions that we agreed upon, people are going to travel and we'll have more leisure time regardless. They're going to spend more time with that free time consuming entertainment media. Word of mouth is going to continue to be super important, and it's going to be as or more powerful than today. FOMO is always going to be a thing, and social proof is going to be important. People will seek belonging and community. And communities are no longer defined in geographical terms. There's interest-based communities, just like you right now are in the middle of kind of some emotional torment because of what's going on with your soccer team at the moment. You're part of a community there, an interest-based community. I was hoping to get some sort of reaction from you on that, but I think it's still a little touchy, isn't it?
No, we've collapsed. So for the audience, break the fourth wall a little bit. We're recording this at the same time Manchester United is playing in the Europa League, and this is the only competition we're still in this season. Our whole season depends on it. We were 2-0 up at halftime. We went 2-2 by full time. And even though Leon had a player sent off, Leon have just scored two goals in the last 5 minutes of extra time. So we're now losing 4-2. So I'm very displeased right now. So for the rest of the episode, I may be very, very grumpy.
Yeah.
So just
So my jokes may not land the same way for the second half of the
very
episode.
grumpy.
So I was actually, while we were doing Stu's News, I was multitasking and trying to figure out how to change my background to the Leon or whatever logo and couldn't figure out how to do it in time and still stay engaged in the conversation. So
Well, see, the visual jokes don't really work on me when I'm blind. That's like when Kwaku and Matt came on the show and had their Stu's News backgrounds, and I completely missed it. So, visual gags, maybe for the audience to indulge in. I don't know. But anyway, let's get back on
Okay.
track. I'm
All right.
very disgruntled right now as a Manchester United
I will
community
try my
member.
hardest not to give you a hard time,
It's
although
okay.
I don't know that I'll succeed.
No.
So we went through all those assumptions and then we talked about the Nintendo example. And there's a few things that really stood out to me that I wanted to maybe double down on. One we've already talked about, and that's the idea of media hitting a cliff in some way. I think that's coming. And we've documented that. But you talked about Nintendo building their own community and that they have built a direct relationship with the audience, that they've got multiple touch points, whether it's people playing the game or in the online community or the email or text or whatever the different, they've got a lot of different ways to engage this community. But then we talked about the fact that they kind of circumvented the community when they released some information. They didn't share fully what pricing was going to look like for the new Switch that was coming out. And I thought a lot about because I've been preaching build a community for a long time, right? Like that's what I talk about pretty consistently. And I'm sitting there going, man, it's a double-edged sword. And so if you're going to build a community, there are some cautions that you need to be aware of. And I had a lot of just secondary thought about this idea that Nintendo violated the unspoken agreement with their audience and ended up in hot water with their audience. And they're going to be fine and all that, totally understand. But the question for me was, okay, how do we make sure that we don't violate an unspoken agreement with our audience or community that
Yeah.
we build?
Well, I can be more specific because the dust has settled a little bit on that debacle, right? So part of it was they weren't transparent with the pricing in the original communication, and then the pricing was more than anticipated by most people. And I think for a lot of people, that maybe doesn't sound like a big deal. Like if that was a Sony PlayStation, if that was a Microsoft Xbox, it probably wouldn't have been a big deal. But Nintendo, one of their core values has always been affordability. If you look at their previous generations of consoles and games, they've always come out at a lower price point of the competitors, and they would prioritize fun and accessibility over financial profits, right? And they've made money because of that. Like they've got a ton of money sitting in the bank. But their core community, who are raised on this value of affordability, now see someone they don't recognize, right? Nintendo is now looking at going for profits over everything else. And it's not just the console, it's also the games. Like they came out with Mario Kart priced at like $80, which is a big jump for a lot of people. And so I think it's about if you create a community, you can't overnight just change your identity because the community won't accept it, right? They bought in on a certain set of values, and if you eliminate those values, or you do something contrary to those values, you're going to get backlash, clearly.
Well, it's more than that. It's that if you create a community, you're no longer fully in charge.
Right.
And I think what happened is there was a value established, an exchange of value, I would say, established between Nintendo and the community. Everybody, when they signed up to be a part of the community, knew that they were given their data. They knew that they were providing value in response, but the expectation of value on the other side was, I'm going to get something for that. And to see them violate their pricing value that they had, spoken or unspoken, the community understood that pricing value was a thing. And then the second part is transparency, and they broke the transparency expectation as well.
Well, and it's double egregious, right? Because they compound. And so if they're going to say, okay, affordability is no longer a priority, they at least need to be honest about that. But the fact that they didn't come out transparently says this subcontext, or this subtext there, which is, we know what we're doing is wrong, but we're not going to admit it. And I think that's where it really went from bad to worse, is people were like, well, you clearly knew we were not going to be happy, but instead of having a conversation and explaining why, you just try to bury it, knowing that we were going to find out anyway. So it was a complete miss from the PR team, the communications team, whoever was in charge of that decision. It was a complete miss.
But here's where that took me, Stuart. So I'm thinking about Nintendo and what happened with their, and they're going to be fine, right? So I don't want to overstate the crisis that they're experiencing with the relationship with their community. I think it's probably going to be fine for the long term.
They're
But
going
as
to
I
sell a lot
think,
of units. They'll be fine.
yeah, they'll be fine. But I think about it for a destination. And you talked about this concept of 1,000 true fans. And I, Stuart, this one has like stuck with me, and I've been putting a lot of thought into it, even to the point where I've even started to think about what a structure of a product of helping destinations build the 1,000 true fans concept. Like I've been thinking a lot about this. So one of the things that I was thinking about is as I'm looking at this concept of 1,000 true fans, because I really believe that that's how Nintendo got to where they are, is they built that kind of a start to their community. Is
Even
how
back in the
can
day, right? Because if you look at what they did even in the 80s, they had a Nintendo Power magazine that they published. They were in owned media before anyone even knew what that term meant. They were creating a magazine that their loyal fans could read that was just basically propaganda, but people were consuming as entertainment back in the 80s. So this is not a new thing for Nintendo.
So for a destination, how do you structure the exchange of value? Because we just talked about it with Nintendo. There were values associated, and I think I'm conflating a little bit values as like a moral value and value as like monetary or other value. And I don't want those to get
Those are
confused
not the
here.
same thing, right?
Yeah. And so I want to make sure everybody that's listening understands the difference there. But when I'm talking about the exchange of value that you get from like the visitor gets or the potential visitor gets and the destination gets, if we're building a community, if we're building those 1,000 few true fans, I would actually love to do a side by side. Here's what the DMO gets. Here's what the fans get in such a way that we actually can build a structure that destinations can follow and understand how to build that community of 1,000 true fans. It doesn't need to be like, okay, you need to do step by step, this, and this, and this. But what is that value exchange that's going to work for both
Well,
sides?
so my concern with that approach is just my gut reaction, having heard that for the first time, is you're setting up the relationship as transactional and not emotional straight away. And I don't know if that's the right way to look at it. Like, from my perspective, the value I'm going to get is all derivatives of the behavior. It's not the intent. And maybe I'm being a little too utopian in that
Tell me what
statement.
you mean by
I
that.
don't know if I even believe what I just said, but like, am I going to derive first party data? Am I going to be able to leverage their information? You know, we talked last time about asking them questions and getting their response and using that as
Yeah.
context for the atomic content that we talked about last time. But I think that's a byproduct, and I think the value ultimately is in the community itself. And so in order for that, I've got to think, I've got to be, and we talked about this last time too. We've got to be obsessed with the customer. What is the value they get? That has to be our primary thought. And if we do that right, then the other stuff is the byproduct. But it's not a transaction. I've got to create an emotional connection with them. I've got to make them feel certain things. They've got to feel recognized, appreciated, valued. They've got to feel like they matter. They've got to feel like they feel they are a part of something bigger than them. And oh my Lord, Manchester United just scored 2 goals. It's now 4-4. It might be going to a
No
penalty
way.
shootout. Yeah, we scored a penalty. I didn't want to say anything, and then we just scored again. There's like literally a minute left, so we might be going to a shootout. You
I
might
am
hear me
blown
squeal
away at
like a
how
girl in the.
engaged you are in this conversation with that going on in the background. You just blew my mind.
Yeah, well, the fact I just assumed we'd lost, so I wasn't really paying attention, but we just scored again. So it's, hey, real, I might be doing a play-by-play call in the next few minutes. It might be a penalty
I'm here
shootout.
for it.
And I'm going to be totally disconnected from this conversation if it goes to a penalty shootout. But anyway, it's 4-4 in the night, 6-6 on aggregate. Soccer's the greatest game in the world. But back to my conversation, to the real purpose of this conversation, like I think we've got to think about the feelings, right? I'm a big believer in order to get a behavior from someone, it starts with emotion. So you've got to make them feel something so that they think something, so that they do something. Like it's in that order. Because again, we talked about this on the show in the past, but the brain, the way it works, right? The whole conscious and subconscious of the brain. Neuroscience suggests that we make decisions on an emotional subconscious level, and then we rationalize it with our conscious brain through logic. Oh my good. We just scored again. This is unreal.
You're kidding me.
No, we just scored like in the 120th minute, and it was one of our defenders. It's not going to a
And
shootout. We just may have pulled it out of the bag. Holy
what a
cow.
waste of all that money I put on Leon.
Oh my goodness. I'm really shocked right now. Like we literally just scored 3 goals in the last 5 minutes of the game. This is,
Holy cow.
I mean, I, this is, I'm speechless at this point. This is phenomenal. I would be jumping around and cussing like a sailor if I wasn't recording, but I am. So let's get back to the show. So, but
Congratulations.
again, feelings start first. You've got to make people feel something. Then they think something, they rationalize it, and then that changes their behaviors. It's got to be in that order.
So I don't disagree with you on that. I don't know that you and I are saying the same thing as far
Okay.
as like the question that we're answering, right?
Okay.
Because I agree with you. Decision making doesn't happen. You have to feel something first, and then you can move on to a decision. We're not disagreeing on that. However, every community has a social contract and an unspoken contract, and there's still an exchange of value on each side. And I'm not asking about what's the campaign that you run to get that value exchanged. I'm saying, let's say you accomplish the feel something that leads to the do something. What is the expectation on both sides? Because I feel like if you're going to go this route of trying to develop 1,000 true fans, I think you need to understand what their expectations are going to be. And I think they need to understand what your expectations are going to be. And then you can structure your tactics around making them feel something in the process.
Yeah, so I agree with that. So that makes a lot more sense. So I think expectations, we talked about this before. I keep saying we talked about this before because I guess this is all a culmination of the things we talked about in the first 25 episodes or 26 episodes. But expectations are the what sets the brand, right? So I believe, you've talked about touch points being the what makes up the brand, right? It's the sum of the touch point, all the touch points. And I ex expanded that a little bit and said it's the difference, the delta between the expectations and the actual experience, right?
I
So
took
if
issue
that's
with that,
positive or
listening
negative.
back to it, by the way.
Okay, go on, push back. Because I think you're
So,
right about expectations. I think that's important. People need to know what they're signing up for, what they're going to get out of the community, 100%. So tell me
I
where you
think
disagree with me.
if you're saying that a brand is the difference in the sum of all the touch points and the expectations, what you're assuming is that somebody had some sort of pre-existing expectation prior to that touch point. And so I'm not
100%.
sure,
This is exactly what I'm saying.
but what about somebody that doesn't know anything about your brand? They can still have an attitude towards your brand, even if there was
Yeah.
no expectation violation.
So let's say I'm selling a widget, right? And someone comes to a website. There's still expectations, whether they're with me specifically or it's based on the assumption of how a website should function, how much friction should be in the booking process, right? There are expectations. Everyone has expectations before they do anything. That's how the brain works. So it might not be specific to your brand, but you go in with an expectation that is either met, exceeded, or missed. But
Okay,
give me an example
so
where you wouldn't have an expectation when you're interacting with a brand.
well, so and it's not even necessary. I'm not necessarily denying that there's an expectation. I'm denying that the correlation between expectation and the sum of all the touch points
All right,
is the final definition.
so let's play it out, right? Let's say I'm going on a journey, I'm going on a road trip, and I need a restroom break, and I need to fill up with gas, and I'm a little hungry and I need some snacks. Okay. I'm going to stop somewhere, right? And maybe I'm brand loyal to a specific gas station. Maybe I'm not. Let's say I'm not. I stop at gas station X and I fill up with gas. Like, one of my expectations is going to be how the pump functions. One of it's going to be the
Sure.
price of the gas, right? There's things there that are either going to in increase my enjoyment and my experience or decrease it. Then I go inside. There's going to be a staff member there. I have expectations of how they're going to treat me. Are they going to be friendly? Are they going to be grumpy? Are they going to be helpful? Are they going to be disinterested? So how that interaction goes is going to affect my perception and my experience. And then I go to the restrooms. I have certain expectations about
Yeah.
cleanliness, about that there's, there's hand towels there, or that the water's going to work. I think we all have expectations. And so now my experience with that entire thing is going to determine how I feel about that brand and whether or not I ever want to go back there.
And totally get your analogy. I'm going to give you an alternative scenario. And
Okay.
this is my friend went to, I'm not going to use Myrtle Beach as the example because I don't want you to be upset about that. So my friend went to Sedona, Arizona. Okay. I don't know why I said Sedona. If you're listening, Sedona, I'm sorry. It just popped into my head. And they had a terrible time. And they come back. I've never been to Sedona. They come back to Myrtle Beach, where apparently I'm from in this scenario. And they say, I just had an awful time in Sedona. And I go to book my trip with my wife for next year. And I say, well, I can tell you where I'm not going. And that's Sedona. There is no gap between my expectations and the actual experience or the sum of the touch points or whatever. I just have a perception or feeling about Sedona because of what somebody else had. And yet that's still a part of my brand because it's how somebody feels about my brand.
Yeah, but I would argue that that word of mouth is a touch point, and
But there's.
so I have a neutral expectation right now, but if someone says it's bad, now that's changed how I have experienced that touch point. So I still think the case is valid.
Okay. I do think I'm very deep into semantics here for our audience.
Yeah.
I just
Yeah.
don't want to perpetuate any further. I do think I see what you're saying. I'm not sure I'm entirely convinced, and I think we can just move on and agree to disagree on that one.
Okay,
But where
that's
this
fair.
started, yeah, where this started though, Stuart, was you were going into the value exchange, right? And how to set expectations correctly.
Yeah,
And I got
so
us way distracted on that.
I would love for you, because this is otherwise it's going to be a 7-hour episode, to tell me how you're thinking about that. Like, can you define, like, I've already talked about two, right? So one is we would collect first party data, I sort of made that thesis for why that's important last episode. Two is I can extract information from them that I can then use, one, to help inform me and create a better experience, but two, to present to, that's a form of word of mouth that I can leverage for other consumers later on. So if my 1,000 true fans think a certain way about a hotel, like they've stayed at that hotel, I can use that. That's a popularity. That's a social proof leverage. If they tell me contextually that there's this restaurant that they went to, and they go there every year for their anniversary. Then now I've got context that if someone's looking for romantic restaurants, okay, this is more likely what they're looking for. So outside of that, like the first party data and content that I can infer information from or leverage, what other value would you expect me on this side of the equation to derive?
So if we're talking 1,000 true fans, I think my number one expectation is visitation. Like I want them to visit the destination. So visitation would be one. And I think exchange, like a two-way exchange of information would be the second. And that's feedback and that's reviews and that's all that. So I
So
definitely agree with you
presence,
on that
right?
side.
Participation. An expectation is participation in the
So on the
community.
other side, I want to articulate what should the DMO provide to the 1,000 true fans. And I think number one should be exclusivity of some sort. And by the way, I'm talking about a feeling of exclusivity, not like they need to feel like they're getting exclusivity as a result of joining the community, right? I think number two, as part of that, probably some sort of access to special deals or something like that, like some
Which
sort
is
of,
it? That's a derivative of exclusivity,
I
right?
guess,
It's the
yeah.
same. Yeah.
Transparency would absolutely be one, especially learning from the example that, from Nintendo. And
And I'd
then I
argue
think,
transparency is sort of a quintessential necessity for any relationship to be successful,
yeah,
you know?
trust, right? Yeah. So I think that I think and in fact, when you said that it's a derivative of exclusivity, honestly, the way I would describe it then, what destinations should be considering to offer to their community is structured exclusivity. So clarity for everyone involved on what exclusivity should look like for that 1,000 true fans.
Well, and maybe it's deeper than that. Maybe it's, you know, I think it's recognition, right? Which can take many forms. It could just be words of affirmation, could be recognition. And then I think that exclusivity, I mean, it could manifest in a lot of different ways, right? It could just be that you're on the inside of club, you know. It could just be access to information, not necessarily monetary value or exclusive offers or deals or anything like that. But I think at the end of the day, it's someone feeling like, again, it comes back to feelings, feeling that they're recognized, that they're appreciated, that they're valued, all those things. How you manifest that, I mean, I think it there's a million ways, but I think it's, I mean, it's isn't it like any relationship? Like, doesn't everyone want to be recognized and appreciated and valued and receive benefit from the relationship? Otherwise, why would we have these relationships? So, but that's how I'm thinking about it.
Well,
It's moving away from this sort of spray and pray user mentality, and it's more a one-to-one communication relationship with an individual and a conversation with an individual
and
over time, over a long time.
that's ultimately where I was going with this idea of 1,000 true fans is, and I touched on this briefly last time, but I've had some time to flesh it out a little bit. And that's that we do a lot of the spray and pray type stuff, and hopefully out of that there'll be 1,000 true fans. But what if you focused a large portion of your budget on building this 1,000 true fans, and as part of that, you're moving media budget into exclusive experiences for these 1,000 true fans. And by the way, I've got to add one expectation that the destination can have for the fans, and that's the willingness to share, the willingness to
They've
not
got
just
to
have these
participate.
experiences,
They've got to participate.
well, participate and then demonstrate those. See, I'm
Yeah.
imagining if I could actually have 1,000 people that I know I've got this relationship with that are going to come to the destination, share our content, and I'm going to have a structured relationship with them in some way, shape, or form. Can I make that reach be more effective than a mass media campaign? That's the question
Yeah.
I'm asking.
Yeah. And there are some pitfalls here. There's some minefields that we got to avoid, right? Because if you think about early Facebook, right? Really was the first social platform of any significance for businesses. You know, we had MySpace and stuff before, but Facebook was the first time that people said, "Oh, wait, this could be a place for commerce." And initially, we were growing fans organically, and they were our 1,000 true fans. They were the early adopters. They were the pioneers. They were the people that really had a strong affinity, because the whole relationship of pages and liking pages and all that wasn't really a thing early on, right? It was a peer-to-peer thing. So when pages came along and brands started getting on and ruining everything around social, the first early adopters to your page, the first people that liked you, were those pioneers, those 1,000 true fans. But then we started saying, man, these people are really valuable. I'm getting a lot out of them. They're really commenting, they're clicking on the links I post. I just need more of those. And so we did what marketers always do, right? Is we try to hack the system, we try to gamify it, we try to accelerate it. And so we started throwing money, paid media, at growing our fans. And so obviously there's a point of diminishing return. There's a normal distribution of fans. Like there's the hardcore on one side, there's the people that don't care about you on the other side, and most people are somewhere in the middle. And so when we're doing paid media, we're really not reaching those people that are the hardcore fans potentially. We're reaching the middle, and it's a mathematical equation at that point where we're saying, if I hit 1,000 people, one of them's going to like my page. And so you diluted the value of the 1,000 true fans because you were chasing the wrong metric. You were chasing size instead of quality. And that's what we've got to avoid here. It would be easy to try to scale this, but it would completely defeat the whole purpose of it.
And that's where, like, I don't believe that it's something you want to scale. I'm literally, and I'm stuck on this, Stuart. So you might need to talk me off the cliff here. I'm literally thinking I want to identify specifically the 1,000 true fans for each destination that I work with, and leverage my marketing and research and messaging and pricing and so on and so forth through that focus group of 1,000 true fans, and actually build a constructive value exchange where both sides walk away feeling like they've got a great relationship.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome, number one. And number two, I think I don't want the audience to take this too literally that it's 1,000, right? And I want everyone to recognize that those people, for most destinations or not all, are already out there. You're probably already affiliated with them in some way, right? They're probably already either in your email database or on your social channels. And if they're a real true fan, they'll be eager to identify themselves, self-identify. So I don't think you have to look too far. I think they're already close to you. What I think you've got to do is discern how you're going to differentiate them from everyone else. Like, what
And
is
an
it?
intentional strategy to do so.
Right. So what is it that defines a true fan for your destination? Is it how many times they've been to the destination? Is it their knowledge of your destination? Is it, you know, that they've been proactive at producing content already on your destination? Like, there's a lot of different dimensions you could look at. So I think for each destination, that might be a little different. Like for us, I already see some, right? There's people that when I post just ocean waves, a video of that, people are going to come and say stuff about, I've been there 20 times, or I'm coming next week, or it's my happy place. I think those potentially are them. But then I think we're going to have to add qualifiers. So our next step is probably going to be figuring out how we're going to identify them, and then starting an outreach plan, a program to our email database, to our social channels, that articulates what we're trying to do here. It articulates the value proposition for the consumer, and then drives the excitement behind it. And then we'll limit it. We'll use exclusivity on the other side in terms of creating FOMO, and say,
Urgency,
yeah, there's going to be some urgency to it in FOMO. So we're going to say the first X number of people that meet this criteria are in the in crowd. And then gradually we'll sort of ratchet that up. We'll increase it. But the expectations are going to be high. We're going to reward them. We haven't figured out how we're going to reward them yet. We're going to make sure that they participate. And there's going to be carrots and sticks. Like if they want to maintain, kind of like a loyalty program with airlines, it's like, you can get this status by doing jumping through the hoops, right? And providing value to us. And if you don't, you might fall back down the ladder.
Oh, and I missed it by just a little bit this last year, and I'm
pains
suffering
you, right?
without Sky Priority this year.
And so is it changing your behavior? Is that
yes,
carrot and
I'm
stick
flying
working?
More with Delta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's changed your it made you feel something you missed out, which made you think something, which is, man, I really need that priority stuff, which made you do something, which is when you see two airline options and one might be even a little bit more expensive, but it's Delta, you're gonna do it.
So how do you do that for a DMO? And I like what you said about the place you're gonna start. Because I think identifying those fans and then building an intentional process to structure the value exchange, not in a cynical way, right? But but you need to know what that looks like in order to help them feel something and provide that value and deliver on the promise that you're making.
Yeah. So you know, we've been rambling again for almost an hour. We've beaten it up a good bit. Like, what are there any final thoughts or any other avenues you want to really drill into? I'm sure this conversation is going to continue in future episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping some of our future guests have listened or are listening and want to come in and chime in. Like, I would love for people to come and say why we're wrong, like why this is not right, because I'm betting heavily on this as a strategy. And I'd rather find out earlier if I'm missing, if I have a blind spot, or if there's assumptions I'm making that are just falsifiable. So love
Can
to
I
invite people
throw
to join
something
the
out there?
conversation. Absolutely.
I want to do an episode, a follow-up episode to this, about the difference between individualization and personalization. You touched on it last time.
Yeah.
That was a point that I wanted to revisit, but I actually think it would be really good to have a guest on to discuss the difference between personalization and individualization. And I would like to invite anybody that feels like they'd be the right guest for that conversation to reach out to us so that we can have you on, because I think that's going to be a really important discussion.
Yeah, and I it's something, I'll be honest, I hadn't even vocalized that difference until that real time in that episode. Like it sort of manifested and occurred to me as we were having the conversation. I mean, it was a thought and a kernel of an idea, but I hadn't articulated it the way we talked about it last episode. So, and it's something I've been thinking about more, and especially because it really wasn't possible until now. Like it's the technology that exists today that didn't exist a year or 2 years ago that enables us to think about content completely different and in an individual, individualized level that we couldn't do before. And in a persistent way across channel, across devices, across sessions, you know, across time. So, yeah, I'm really, that's something I'm thinking about a lot as well. So,
very cool.
So, Adam, overall, you'd say you sort of agree with the direction. I got you thinking a little different. You're going to shift your whole business model to focus on this?
I just got done shifting my whole business model. I don't know if I'll do it again. But no, I actually feel like this is a function of the community building process that we've pivoted to, right? And so I think this is a great kind of next generation of the steps that I've taken in my business. I want to continue to explore the 1,000 true fans concept, because I think my ultimate takeaway from this conversation is that I believe that if destinations, instead of having a, like you mentioned, that if you're trying to target everybody in the middle, you hope that if 1,000 people see it, maybe one person will go like your page or, you know, visit the destination or what. I think I want to shift my view on marketing strategy from the numbers game that you're talking about to instead a very intentional strategy with a core group, a core community. And I've got a lot of thoughts about how to structure that in kind of a more repeatable format for destinations. And that's what I'll be working on over the next little bit.
Good. Well, Adam, ever the capitalist, here's me trying to be like the evangelist for the whole community. And Adam's like, how can I make money from this? It's amazing.
You know what? If you do the right thing, the money will come.
That's true. Oh, man. This has been good, man. I like this sort of therapy session where we just sort of have a conversation that we maybe haven't had before. We'd love to invite more people to the table to join us. We've got some amazing episodes coming up. We've got Jason Hollick from Kissimmee coming up. We got Amir Alon coming back from Longwoods for his second episode. We got some others, some folks that we Mo. Haven't talked to before. Oh yeah, we got Mo from Bamwanga. So we've got some really killer folks. Jeanette Roush is going to be on the show soon, along with Vimal VS talking about the ethics of AI. So we got some really cool content coming up, but we would love to have more folks from outside of our circle. I know we've got one guest that's lined up that I've never had a conversation with. I don't think you've really had a conversation with that reached out to us on LinkedIn. And so, you know, if you have topics, if you have thoughts, if you have ideas, even if it's not you that wants to come on the show, but you know someone that maybe has a different take on the world that we live in, or maybe it's a view from outside of our industry. Like, we'd love to have them on the show. Like, this is a show for our destination marketing industry to just be a little bit better tomorrow than it was today by having these conversations that maybe are being had in quiet, closed quarters, but aren't being had out in the open. And so we hopefully can move forward together. Like, this is the greatest industry in the world, and I just want it to be successful. And I worry that it's not going to be relevant if we don't evolve. And so let's keep pushing the industry forward together. It's a lot of fun to do it. So, Adam, really appreciate you today. They want to find you. Where can they do that?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn, Adam Stoker, or find me on Tourism IQ.
Great. And if you want to reach out to me, it's stuart.butler@visitmodelbeach.com, or come visit Model Beach. That would be great. And I'll come have a beach easy beer with you at Grand Strand Brewing.
Have you seen an increase in vendor outreach since you started sharing your email on this show?
I don't know if I can measure an increase because I get so much. And I've talked about it. I talked about this. I did a session at DI Marcom with Jeanette and Vimal. And it was about AI. And I told people, and I'll tell them here too, if you send me a generic cold email, I'm not going to respond to it if you're a vendor. Just not. If you're introduced by someone I know, you know, that word of mouth is very important. If a friend of mine or someone I trust introduces you, I'll have a conversation with you. If you send me something that's unique and novel and stands out, that shows me that you care and that you've done your homework, I might, there's a good chance I'll reach out. So what we're talking about being good for DMOs is also good for vendors. Treat people like people.
Yeah.
You know, if you want me to be one of your 1,000 true fans, then you got to work a little harder for it. So, but I welcome it. Like, we're always looking for new solutions and new technologies. Just try a little harder, guys. It's not difficult. But thank you for listening. Please subscribe, leave a review. And until next time. Oh, by the way, Adam, we won. We're in the next round.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah. It was a roller coaster of an emotion, just like this episode. But United, we march on. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. Dude.
Man, I
don't know how I kept it together. I do not know how I kept it together.
I don't either.
Holy cow.
I would not have been very valuable on this call if it was my team. And so I can't believe, because you were very engaged. I'm impressed.